Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days and two episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. Enjoy.
Johnny Dollar.
Les Walters, Johnny, at Worldwide Mutual.
Well, hi, Les.
Say, I heard your report on that man who disappeared up in Eugene, Oregon a couple of weeks ago.
Jonathan Doe?
Yeah.
The man who never really existed?
That's right.
That was a pretty rough one, Les.
A lot easier for you to find a man who does exist, or who did.
Well, which is it?
I wish I knew. His name is Elmer Loomis, L-E-U-M-A-S.
Loomis, so what happened?
I told you, he disappeared.
I mean, what have you got to go on? Leads, clues, whatever you want to call them?
Well, that's the funny part of it.
Yeah?
Nothing, Johnny. Absolutely nothing to go on.
You call that funny?
So maybe you better come on over here. We can talk about it.
Well, now, Les.
Yeah?
So maybe you're right.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Worldwide Mutual Insurance Company Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Loomis matter, spelled L-E-U-M-A-S. No leads at all, huh? Well, at least it gives me a clean, uncluttered start. So, expense account item one, $1.10 for a taxi to the office of Worldwide Mutual in the Sperling Building down on the square.
Hi, Johnny. I suppose I could have saved time by telling you over the phone just to pack your bags and head on down to Vineland, but sit down.
Thanks. Vineland, New Jersey?
That's right. About halfway between Philadelphia and Atlantic City.
Yeah, Les, I know the place. I handle a couple of... Hey, wait a minute. You said Loomis?
That's right, Elmer Loomis, the man who disappeared.
Isn't there a Loomis glass company in Vineland?
One of the biggest. Up till a few years ago when he retired, Elmer Loomis was the sole owner of it.
And he must be plenty wealthy, huh?
Millions.
Which offers a lot of possible reasons for his disappearance.
That's right.
Okay, then, let's just tell me all.
I thought I made myself clear, Johnny, when I said I should have sent you right on down there to Vineland, because all I know about him is that he's wealthy, retired, sportsman, yachtsman, that sort of thing, and he suddenly vanished.
How old a man is he?
Well, according to the copy of the policy, he's 59.
Straight life?
Straight life.
And who stands to benefit if his body just happens to turn up somewhere dead?
His wife, Lena.
How old is she?
Let's see, she was 30 last June.
Aw.
That's right. And incidentally, I understand she's quite a beauty. At least according to Harry Ware, who sold the policy.
Incidentally, huh?
What do you mean by that?
Aw, use your head, Les. Young, attractive woman, wealthy husband, nearly twice her age. Here we go again.
Now, doggone jumping to conclusions, Johnny.
Oh, no, of course not.
Of course not.
But just how soon do you suppose I can make connections to Vineland, New Jersey? Two, $4 even for a couple of taxi fares. One back to my apartment where I packed a bag, the other out to Bradley Field. Item three, $12.55 for a plane to Philadelphia. Item four, there in the city of brotherly love, $50 deposit on a rental car. After a late and hasty lunch, that's item five, $2.25, I drove across the Delaware River Bridge and picked up Route 47. South Jersey is flat as a pancake, but full of beautiful homes and rich farmland, occasional cranberry bogs, and lots of big poultry farms and peach orchards. So the drive was a pleasant one. Then, in Vineland, the so-called heart of sunny southern Jersey, I went straight to police headquarters, a block off Landis Avenue, the main drag. I contacted Sergeant Louis Tommaso, with whom I'd worked before. As usual, he was right on the ball.
Kind of had a hunch you might be dragged in on this. How are you, Johnny?
Well, pretty good, Louis. Or rather, I'm not so sure. You have any real leads on this case?
Johnny?
Yeah?
Let me hand you a thought for the day.
Okay, shoot.
Don't be surprised when you find that Lena Loomis isn't at all broken up over this loss of her husband, because she isn't. If you ask me, she's downright tickled to death about it.
Is that your snide way of telling me that she's interested in somebody else? Somebody closer to her own age?
Johnny, if I could find out who that somebody else is. But who knows, maybe there isn't any. Or maybe there's a dozen of them, I don't know. This gal is the social type. One big party after another, night after night, month after month, ever since they got married.
And Loomis?
Couldn't stay far enough away from it all. spend most of his time off on hunting or fishing trips or out on his yacht.
Funny that he ever married her in the first place.
Well, when a gorgeous young charmer starts cooing at a poor, lonely widower, nearly 60, well, what do you expect?
Apparently all she cared about was getting her hooks on his money.
What else?
When did he go?
10 days ago. Got up, had breakfast, announced he was going to spend the day in Philadelphia. Walked out the front door, and that was the last anybody ever saw.
And what about enemies, Lou?
Not a one that anybody knows.
I mean, any reason to think he might have been hauled off and murdered?
The only reason to think he wasn't is the fact he took some luggage, some clothing with him.
Well, that doesn't prove anything. You've questioned his wife, of course.
Yeah. When you get through talking to her, you'll know just as much or as little as I do.
Well, how about his favorite hunting and fishing spots?
Check them all, favorite and otherwise. Nothing.
You say that he owns a yacht.
Owned.
Huh?
A sailboat, a big one. Kept it down in the little town of Tuckahoe on the Tuckahoe River.
So?
He just happened to have sold that yacht 2 days before he disappeared.
Ah.
Johnny, we haven't a single solitary thing to go on.
You sure about that, Lou?
What do you mean?
Not even his wife?
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Loomis Matter.
Expense account item 6580, dinner for Sergeant Louis Tomaso and myself at the East Landis Hotel there in Vineland, New Jersey. Then he gave me some directions and I left him and drove east on Landis Avenue. In case you're interested, I found out that a guy by the name of Landis founded this fair city. The Loomis home was a massive red brick affair set in the middle of, well, it must have been nearly an acre of huge lawns and trees and flower beds. 25 or 30 rooms, I'd guess, really a mansion. And the long, broad driveway was lined with maple trees. In other words, there was money here, plenty. As for Lena Loomis, wowee. If she was 30, believe me, she didn't look it. And brother, she had everything. She was tall, lithe, and brunette, with just enough makeup to enhance her soft and gently tanned complexion. She wore a pair of sleek blue velvet capris and a light silk blouse. A subtle touch of arpège that, while at the risk of sounding repetitious, wowie.
Well, come in, Johnny.
Yeah. How an old codger, wealthy or not, could ever rate something like this. And framed there in the doorway and a trace of moonlight filtering through the trees, believe me.
Johnny?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Loomis.
Mrs. Loomis? And with that look in your eye, it's Lena, and you know it, and come in.
Yeah, sure, thanks.
Oh, darn it, you would come the one night when I'm not having a party. In here, Johnny.
Yeah.
The place is dead as a doornail. Then I suppose I have to give the servant some time off. Sit down, huh? Like a drink?
Yeah, I think I could use it. No, thanks.
Not even to keep me company? Scotch and soda?
A light one.
Now, I just knew that was you I saw down on Landis.
What? What'd you say?
I say I just knew you'd be coming down here to investigate Elmer's disappearance. So when you rang the doorbell just now, I wasn't the least bit surprised.
Oh, that's so?
Elmer was always a great fan of yours. Your radio program, I mean. Well, you tell about all those cases you solve. That's why I knew you the second I saw you.
I see. Well, now, Lena.
Johnny, I'm so fed up with answering questions about him. That Louis Tomaso from the police department has just about driven me crazy with him. He is kind of a cute guy, though, isn't he? Do you know him?
Well, as a matter of fact, I talked with him just before.
Oh, here's your drink.
Oh, thanks.
Bottoms up.
Huh? These glasses must hold about a quart.
Oh, well, you know what I mean. Skull.
Yeah, skull.
Now, Johnny, I don't know how much Louis told you about Elmer vanishing this way, but whatever it was, there's nothing more I can tell you. He's gone. That's all. And you know something? I don't mind a bit.
Yeah, well, I kind of had a notion.
If you find his body lying around somewhere, well, just look at all it gets me. This home and property and all the stock in the glass company he sold and money. More money, Johnny, than you could even imagine.
Yeah. And I believe that his insurance amounts
to
quite a lot.
Oh, the insurance. Oh, that's nothing compared to all the money he has lying around in banks all over the place. It'll all be mine. And if you don't think I know how to use it...
You know, there are a couple of things that might put a crimp in your plans, Lena.
What Lena wants, Lena gets. Why do you think I ever married Elmer in the first place? Ooh, Elmer, isn't that a terrible name?
Suppose I find out that he's been murdered.
Now, who would ever want to murder poor, sweet old Elmer, and why?
Oh, maybe to get hold of all this money you've been talking about.
Of course not. I told you, I get everything.
That's exactly what I was...
If he just doesn't show up after 7 years, well, you know, the statute of limitations.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And what if he does come back? You know, suffering from amnesia, or maybe he was in an accident somewhere, you know.
Wow.
So I'll do what I can to keep him happy as long as he lives, and then I'll have it all. I don't love him, Johnny, not a bit. But I do try to keep him happy. It's the least I can do.
Lena.
And then when he dies, well, like I said.
Lena, listen to me.
He's a handsome old dog. I'll say that for him. You see, there in that picture on the table beside
you? Yeah, I see. But now listen.
Tall, wiry, with that big shock of hair.
Yes, I see it.
But why he kept that mustache and Van Dyke? Well, they made him look even older than he was. I mean, than he is.
Or did you mean was?
What?
Now, Lena, listen. There are some things I want to know.
How about a drink?
For instance, your husband had a yacht.
Oh, didn't you know? He sold it just before he was... I mean, just before he disappeared.
To whom?
Does it matter?
Yes.
Well, it was some man by the name of... Well, here. Here's the bill of sale. His name is Samuel Remley.
Remley.
Right here. R-E-M-L-E, Samuel Remley.
At Tuckahoe, New Jersey.
Well, so now you've asked a question, you've got an answer, so let's have another drink, huh?
So help me, I simply couldn't pin her down to answering my questions. After a solid hour of trying, all I ended up with was an invitation to stick around for a big party she was throwing the following night. Young, charming, attractive, yes. But trying to make sense with her was a lost cause. Finally, standing out at the front door ready to leave, I decided to switch my tactics.
You can't mean that.
That is exactly what I mean, because from what you've told me, what little you've told me, there's only one conclusion I can draw.
John.
And you somehow contrived to have your husband done away with, to get your hands on all that money you've been yapping about.
Don't you see I get it all anyway, sooner or later?
Well, why wait, huh?
Even if I have to wait out to 7 years for that statute of limitations. Now listen, Johnny.
Yeah?
I don't like this. I don't like the way you're accusing me. You're threatening me.
That's right. I gave you all the chance I could to cooperate, but you wouldn't take...
Now, you just get out. You get out of here.
Sure, for the time being.
No. You stay away from me. Don't you ever come back
here. You better play it my way, Lena.
No! Get out!
Oh, well.
Hey, just a minute, buddy.
Oh, who are you?
Me? I just happened to be looking out for Mrs. Loomis.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I don't like what I was hearing just now.
Oh, that's too bad. Now, if you'll get out of my way.
Oh, no, you don't, Buster.
Oh, no.
Jerry?
Jerry.
That's right, me.
Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Came to, my card case was gone. There was a lump on my head that must have been made by a blackjack. And inside my head was the solid conviction that Lena Loomis was, without question, responsible for the disappearance, possibly the murder of her husband. I climbed painfully back into my car, drove to the hotel, and after a dirty look from the night clerk, got a rum and hit the sack. Early the next morning, I was down at police headquarters.
Not having had a good look at him, you don't give us much to go on.
Yeah, well, look, if you pick them up, Lou, let me take care of them.
Now, Johnny...
Let's just say I want to question him.
Did you get anywhere with Mrs. Loomis?
Oh, Lou, the only question I got straight answers for was... Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah?
The yacht. Did you check out that yacht?
I told you, Loomis sold it just before he disappeared. I saw the bill of sale on it myself.
Yeah, so did I. But, Louie, I got a hunch. How far is Tuckahoe?
35 miles. He kept the boat at Wilson's Landing.
Good.
Now listen, Johnny.
Lou, I'm going to play this hunch for all it's worth. It was more than a hunch, because it had to do with a rather strange and interesting combination of names. And the more I thought about it, well, I made tracks to the little town of Tuckahoe, to Wilson's Landing on the Tuckahoe River.
car, Mr. Dollar. Right here is where the Lena was tied up.
But the owner, this Mr. Remley, he took it out last night?
Yes, sir.
Did you know the previous owner?
No, I'm kind of new here. But the boss must have. Captain Wilson.
Where is he?
Been down to Atlantic City the past week.
All right. What does this Samuel Remley look like?
Well, Mr. Remley's an old man, about 60.
Yeah?
Tall, slim, kind of wiry.
Full head of hair, a mustache, and a little Van Dyke beard?
Oh, no, sir. Mr. Remley's clean-shaved and wears a butch.
Well, now listen.
Yes, sir?
Do you know where he headed for when he took off last night?
No, I don't, sir.
Then show me the nearest telephone. Item 7, $3 for telephone calls. I hit pay dirt on the fourth one to the Coast Guard station at Cape May.
Why, yes, Mr. Dollar. The Lena pulled in here a couple hours ago.
Good.
She's tied up at the clubhouse dock. I can see her from here.
Then, Captain, I'll be right down there. Highway police must have all been looking the other way, for I'm sure I deserved a handful of tickets for speeding on the trip down to Cape May. And there I found the Lena, tied up and taking on supplies. The owner? Well, when I told him who I was, he spread his hands quietly, smiled, led me down into the cabin, and poured a couple of drinks.
Salute, Mr. Dollar.
Salute, Mr., Well, is it Loomis or Remley?
Either. Names tip you off?
It took a while to get through this thick skull of mine, but... Well, the rather unusual spelling of your right name, L-E-U-M-A-S.
Yes. And spelled backward, it comes out Samuel.
Elmer spelled backward comes out Remley. Elmer Loomis, Samuel Remley.
Hmm. So obvious, I hoped it might be overlooked, but... Oh, incidentally, I'm sorry about Pete and Jerry.
Pete and Jerry?
The bodyguards I left for Lena. Unknown to her, of course.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to meet those boys again.
But I wanted to be sure she'd be watched over while I was away, taking time to really figure out what to do about her, about our rather pitiful relationship.
That's the reason for the disappearing act?
Yes. I knew that if I suggested just going away alone, she wouldn't hear of it. So...
And you were staying right here in Tuckahoe?
Old Cap Wilson at the landing knew who I was, of course. But nobody else did after I cut my hair and beard. Nobody else had really known me there anyway.
But then last night you took off.
When the boys came down and told me... Oh, here, by the way, you'd better have your credentials back.
Oh, thanks. Where were you going?
I don't know. Most anywhere. I might have realized I wouldn't get away from you, though. I'm a great admirer of yours, Dollar.
Well, thanks.
So, what now?
You've had time to make up your mind about your wife, I mean?
Oh, yes, I suppose so.
Well, I don't know of any formal charges I ought to make against you. Of course, the Vineland police.
I'll somehow try to make up to them for all the trouble I've caused them. Would you like to sail back to Tuckahoe?
Well, thanks. I've got my car. And who knows? Maybe you'd like a little more time to think. Alone. So, it wasn't much of a case after all. The two thugs, Sergeant Louis locked them up for assault, and I guess that'll have to do for them. As for Loomis and his wife, well, I'm glad it isn't my problem. Expense account total, including the trip back to Hartford, $89.50. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
That's a cracking, Johnny. Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Well, hiya, Pat.
1, 2, 3 in a row.
Now, what's that supposed to mean?
Policy by the name of Jonathan Doe.
Yeah, so what happened? He turned out to be a man who never existed.
I know. And then last week it was Elmer Loomis. Find him, find his body, find out who murdered him.
Only his disappearance was rigged by himself to get away from his wife. Not very cleverly done, however.
Well, this one was, Johnny. Everybody at first.
Where?
Kerr's Ferry, New York. Little town along the Hudson over near Yonkers.
Well, if you know it was a fake, what do you want me to do about it?
Find him. Bring him in so we can prefer charges against him.
What kind of charges?
Perpetrating
What if he hasn't collected? I'm afraid I don't get it.
You will. Come on down here to the office and I'll tell you about it.
Is policy a big one?
Very.
Then you won't quibble over the size of my expense account.
I didn't say that.
But of course that's what you meant.
Johnny.
Okay, Pat. I'll be over in a few minutes.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the little man who was there matter. Three mysterious disappearances in a row. I almost wish somebody'd set a fire, rob a bank for a change. But expense account item one, $1.20 for a cab to the office of Universal Adjustment Bureau. As usual, Pat McCracken got straight to the point.
Plain as day, Johnny. Howard L. Edwards insured his life for $50,000, double indemnity.
So?
Beneficiary, his wife, Mary Louise. In other words, if he was accidentally killed, his wife would collect a cool $100,000.
But he wasn't.
He wasn't.
You sure?
Oh, the police down there in Curse Ferry thought otherwise at first. You know, when they discovered the way his car had toppled over into the Hudson River just above town.
Is that the way he staged it?
But when they found out that Edwards and his wife were stony broke and had been for months, that if it wasn't for the finance company, they'd have starved by now. Well, that's what wised them up.
But, Pat, if they haven't found him or his body...
Him, Johnny. According to the police, his wife finally broke down and confessed that they had planned a disappearing act for quite some time.
Oh,
sure. They figured when his car was found, they'd think his body had washed down the Hudson, through the Narrows, into the ocean, and the company would pay off.
Yeah, I see.
Then once she got the money, well, pack up and leave and meet him wherever it was they'd planned to meet.
Would the company have paid off without a body, without absolute proof of death?
That might depend on the court, on how smart a lawyer she got hold of. But what if they did have to wait for 7 years for the statute of limitations to run out?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Oh, this kind of fraud has been tried before, Johnny. And sometimes, I'm afraid, probably it's been got away with. So, with $100,000 in...
So, money, if I find him, I get that nice fat fee we were talking about.
That's right. That's exactly... No! Look, and you take it easy with that freewheeling expense account, will you, for once?
Why, Pat, I never do.
Would you find him for us, huh, Johnny? Just bring him in so we can throw the book at him.
Okay. Give me his address, whom to contact in Curse Ferry, and I'll see what I can do. Expense account item 2, $4.85 for a tank full of gas. I decided to use my own car, not to save money for the company, but to save time for myself. My first contact down in Curse Ferry was Police Sergeant Ben Ringler, who had been in charge of the case right from the beginning. Headquarters was the back room of a small brick building that served as City Hall.
All right. You know how the highway skirts the edge of the river just about town? Well, it was rainy and wet that night. He missed the curb, skidded over the edge, and rolled down into the river. At least that's what he tried to make it look like.
You mean he deliberately ran that car into the river?
Sure he did. There wasn't a sign of a skid mark.
Sergeant, how long after it happened did you find the car?
Wife said he'd left home after dinner the night before. But after midnight she called us, said to please go out and look for him. Like we got nothing to do but go out and look for some guy who was away from home a couple of hours.
And you found the car?
I'm telling you. Some kid who was fishing down there seen the wheels of the car sticking out of the water early the next morning after the rain.
Uh-huh. In other words, it's possible that if there had been skid marks, the rain might have obliterated them.
Oh, stop kidding yourself. Him and his wife were so broke, they...
What did Howard Edwards do for a living?
Called himself an inventor. And listen, him and his wife even already had the house up for sale.
So?
Well, don't you see? As soon as she collected the insurance money, she could leave town and nobody think nothing of it.
Mrs. Edwards admit all this to you?
Oh, are you kidding?
Well?
Of course not. But when she let slip about their planning a disappearance, well, Dollar, no matter how you look at it, 2 and 2 makes 4. So don't worry, she'll admit it before I'm through with her. I've cracked harder nuts than her in my time.
Maybe I'd better see and talk to her.
Sure, go ahead. Make her break down and tell you where he's gone, if you can.
Now, just what do you mean by that?
You young kids think you're pretty smart. But, mister, you just try to get anything out of her.
Oh, I can try.
Yeah? Good luck, Dollar. You're going to need it.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Great scientific achievements usually are made through the combined efforts of many men. Such is the story of the Atlantic Cable, one of the outstanding milestones of the 19th century. But today the name of one man remains to remind us of that venture. The organizer and director, Cyrus W. Field, a retired paper merchant who risked his fortune, sanity, and integrity in an awesome adventure that lasted 12 long years. Field first was approached in regard to a short underwater cable to Newfoundland in 1854. After a huge investment of both money and energy, the cable was completed the following summer. Field then went to England to tackle the much larger problem of laying the Atlantic cable. Many futile attempts were made. Cable was broken. Splices were made. Cable was lost. Tempers flew, and ship captains resigned in disgust. Still, Field wouldn't give up. Finally, on August 8, 1858, it appeared that the project had been successfully completed. Cyrus Field went ashore and walked 15 miles to the nearest telegraph station. There he wired his wife, the Associated Press, and President Buchanan. He informed the president that Queen Victoria would telegraph her congratulations over the new cable. But before the Queen's message was completed, the line went dead. The much-hailed project was again a failure. Faulty insulation was blamed. In 1865, the largest steamboat afloat, the Great Eastern, made another attempt. Just 660 miles from Newfoundland, the cable parted. Inadequate hoisting tackle prevented its recovery. Field broke down and wept like a child. And yet, the very next year, he sailed with the Great Eastern for one more try. This time, every failure had been studied, every provision made. On July 27th, 1866, Cyrus Field landed at Heart's Content. After personally cabling the unbelievable news, he immediately boarded the Great Eastern, retrieved the broken cable of the year before, spliced it, and laid the second Atlantic cable. Cyrus W. Field, another American whose driving energy insisted that somehow there must be a way. Let's find it. And now, Act Two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Little Man Who Was There matter.
No. No, I won't open the door.
Mrs. Edwards?
Please go away. Please leave me alone.
I want to talk to you, Mrs. Edwards, about your husband.
Why don't you, policeman, leave me
alone? I'm not the police, ma'am.
Oh, yes, you are. You're trying to fool me again, like the man who came yesterday. Like the one who kept calling me on the telephone all
night. My name is Johnny Dollar, from the insurance company.
The insurance? You sure of that?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, if you put your foot in the door like that, Peter Barskin, yesterday...
No, here... Here are my credentials, Mrs. Edwards.
Johnny Dollar, insurance. Oh, please come in, Mr. Dollar. I'm so glad you've come. Maybe you can help to find Howard. I just can't believe he's dead.
Well, that seems to agree with the police theory, Mrs. Edwards.
The police? They've been terrible. They've been trying to drive me out of my mind, make me see a lot of things that aren't so. Day and night, they've been driving me crazy. Ben Ringler and that no-good son-in-law, he had them put on the force, coming here questioning me, calling on the phone in the middle of the night. Well, it's terrible. And if losing Howard wasn't enough, it's...
You've been pretty much broken up over his death or disappearance, whichever it is. Well?
No, Mr. Dollar.
What?
Please, sit down, sir.
Thanks.
The past few years... Howard has been so occupied with his invention.
What kind of invention?
A machine. A device of some kind for molding plastics. I'm afraid I don't know much about it. He wouldn't tell me. Kept to himself all the time.
Well, he must have
at
least...
It was like an obsession with him. He was so wrapped up in it that I'm afraid I haven't been much more than a housekeeper for him these past few years.
What have you been living on, Mrs. Edwards?
When the money I had ran out, we had to borrow, but now that's all gone.
You have your home up for sale. I noticed the sign out front.
All that we have left.
Unless, of course, you could collect the insurance on your husband.
Yes, the insurance. Then I wouldn't have to worry anymore. It would make up for all the years of struggling along on almost nothing and skimping and...
Now, wait a minute, Mrs. Edwards.
Yes?
You sound as though you'd like to have your husband proven dead.
At least it would provide a decent living for me after all these... No. Oh, no. That sounds terrible, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
I didn't mean that I wish him dead. I only meant that... Well, if he is...
When I first got here, you said you hoped I could find him.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Dollar.
Sure, sure. So that you and he could continue this sad life of poverty and not really getting along together?
No, don't you see? We'd have money.
Oh?
Because of his invention. He'd finally found someone who would buy it for a lot of money and a lot of royalty when it's used. But now even that is gone.
Gone? What do you mean gone?
All the plans and drawings. He took them with him that night.
And just where was he taking them?
To the man, the company, whatever it was he was selling it to. At least I think he was.
In the middle of the night?
Now they're all gone, somewhere in the Hudson River.
You told the police about this?
Yes, I told Ben Ringler.
He found no sign of them in the car?
No. And that son-in-law, that Peter Moskin, he said I was lying about those papers.
All right, Mrs. Edwards, listen to me.
Yes.
Considering the relationship of you and your husband, wouldn't it be logical for him to leave you, sell his invention for whatever he could get, and live happily on the money all by himself?
And just leave me with nothing?
Yeah.
No. No. In spite of... Oh, no, Mr. Dollar, he wouldn't do that.
I didn't say leave you with nothing. All he had to do was make it look as though he'd been killed.
Make it look?
That's right, in a car accident.
Oh, no.
Well, that's the way you planned it, isn't it? Then you'd both be taken care of, free of each other and with plenty of money.
No, Mr. Dollar.
Didn't you admit to the police that you two planned his disappearance?
Oh, no. I told him, Ben Ringler and that son-in-law.
Told him what?
That before Howard knew his invention would work, that he could sell it, Howard did talk of going away so he could work on it undisturbed without me under his feet. That's all I said. Ben told your insurance company. Ben made it sound like... Oh, don't you believe me, Mr. Dollar.
I'll see you later. Item 3, a dollar even for a bite to eat at the local lunch wagon. Then I went back to headquarters where I found not only Sergeant Ben Ringler, but his son-in-law, Patrolman Peter Boskin. I found him very busy playing checkers.
Come on, Pete. Crown me.
Yeah, Pop, there you are.
And now you can give up. Black Dollar is on this case of his.
I'll set him up again.
Didn't get a thing out of Mr. Edwards, did you?
Maybe I did.
Just like I told you, you would... Huh?
You mean you did get something out of a dollar?
Where's the chief of this police department?
Been away a couple of weeks. I'm in charge.
Well, if he had any sense of duty, he'd be back here.
Hey, what do you mean by that?
Pete, I mean that you and your father-in-law have considered only two possibilities.
Have we?
The first was accidental death.
Now, listen, I told
you... Yeah, you told me. You eliminated that.
Sure did.
The other was deliberate disappearance.
And that's what it was.
But there's another, Ben. The one I'm going to work on.
Yeah, what's that? Sonny?
Murder.
What?
That's right. Murder.
Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Our Constitution is a flexible document. It has changed with the changing years to meet changed conditions. An example is the way in which we elect our United States senators. When the Constitution was ratified, and for 125 years thereafter, the people could not elect their own senators. Instead, the senators were chosen by the state legislatures. The founding fathers believed in democracy, but they did not want their new republic to be wrecked by irresponsible mob rule. Democracy was a new form of government. Most of the voters had little knowledge and less experience in governing themselves. And so the Constitution provided that while the people could elect their representatives to Congress, they could not elect their senators directly. A century and a quarter of experience in self-government made such a safeguard against mob rule obsolete. And by 1912, the people were ready to demand the right to elect their senators by popular vote. They received this right in the 17th Amendment to our Constitution. This amendment illustrates how our Constitution lives and grows in our changing world, to the end that this country of yours and mine shall be our country under God.
And now Act Three of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
I learned from Sergeant Ringler and his smarty pants son-in-law that Mr. Edwards' car had been left untouched where they'd hauled it out of the river north of Kerr's Ferry. It was late in the afternoon, but item four, there in police headquarters, 30 cents for a phone call to another headquarters, the 18th Precinct down in New York.
This Lieutenant Singer.
Hey, Johnny Dollar, Randy, I want you to do something for me.
Johnny, long time no see.
Yeah, listen, will you? Have you got somebody in the crew who can come up here to Kerr's Ferry and give me a hand? Somebody who knows something about fingerprints?
Johnny, it's about 20, 30 miles outside our jurisdiction.
So what?
Well, of course, some guy was off duty. Maybe a real top man like Marty Levitt.
How soon can he get here?
Well, what's it all about,
How
Johnny?
Soon? It's getting late. It's getting dark.
Well, a little over an hour if he can catch a train. But what kind of case...
Okay, Randy, thanks.
Now, look, Dollar. You think we can't handle these things good enough ourselves?
Yeah, Dollar.
Yeah. That's exactly what I think. It was dark by the time Marty Levitt arrived, but he had a flashlight in his kit, and I brought along my own. So I drove him out to where the car sat up between the highway and the river. His examination was quick and efficient. And when he'd finished...
No, I don't get it.
Huh? What'd you say?
Holy. That's a wonder a lot of cars and trucks don't miss that curve. But as to this one, Johnny, I don't get it.
What do you mean, Marty?
Johnny, I haven't uncovered a single fingerprint, except for some old ones on the gas cap, under the hood, that sort of thing.
And except for Mr. Edwards' own prints on the steering wheel and gear shift lever.
No.
Huh?
Steering wheel, gear shift, light switch, door handles, everything wiped clean.
Well, of course, this wreck was in the river a few hours.
I don't care if it was in there a week. They'd still be on it. There aren't even any prints from whoever hauled it out of the river.
Marty.
Sure, Johnny. Somebody carefully wiped them off. People don't do that without a reason. So, where do you go from here?
Yeah. I drove Marty into his train for New York. Then, purely on a hunch, drove over to the Edwards house. Every light in the place was on, and through the windows I could see Mrs. Edwards apparently aimlessly but frantically rushing from one room to another, then back again. Edwards, this is Johnny Dollar.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, thank heaven. Oh, Mr. Dollar, look. I was only down to the drugstore a few minutes, not more than 15 minutes, and look what he did to my house. He ransacked it.
Who?
I don't know. It's so dark out. He ran out the back way when I came in.
Have you found anything missing?
I don't know. I haven't.
Is this your husband's desk?
Yes, yes, it is.
Looks to me like this was the target.
The rest of the house, and the closets, the bureau.
Oh, sure. To keep you from realizing this was what he was after.
Wait. Howard kept that locked.
Yeah, it has been broken open.
I was never allowed to look in his desk.
Did you call the police?
The police. Now, what would they do after the way they've treated
Cortina
me?
Cortina Plastics Company. Marino Plastic Molding Corporation. General Easton.
They were the ones that turned him down, I think.
Wait a minute. Here's part of a letter. Another scrap caught in this crack here. Apparently overlooked and... Something Town Plastics Incorporated.
Yes, Bridgertown.
Huh?
I think that was the name of the company that was going
wait
to...
Wait now. Check through your local authority. Agreed to represent us these negotiations.
Aaron Kurz. So suggest you contact Mr. No wonder, Mrs. Edwards.
What? Mr. Dollar?
The man your husband went to meet that night to make the deal on his invention.
What?
Recommended by some of the local authorities, huh?
I don't understand.
Oh, believe me, he's hanged himself by overlooking these scraps of paper.
Who, Mr. Dollar, who?
When he realized how much the invention was worth, instead of negotiating with your husband, he decided to kill him. Yeah, ran his car into the river with him in it.
And you know who he is?
You'll never tell, Dollar.
Peter Boskin.
You or anybody else. See what I mean?
You know something, Pete? This isn't Gunsmoke.
What?
But if you think you can outdraw me, Pete...
How'd you find out?
Matter of fact, Pete, I didn't know it was you until you came in here waving this gun.
Johnny Dollar, as acting chief of police for the town of Kerr's Ferry, I arrest you for the...
Put that thing down, Banner. Do you want some of the same?
No, Dollar.
Cross it over. On the floor. Okay. And I not only suspect that Kerr's Ferry is going to have a new police force, but who knows? You and Pete might even share the same electric chair. Sure, it's up to the courts. But when the state police came in and found the papers on the invention hidden away in Pete's house... Oh, that invention, by the way, now belongs to Mrs. Edwards, to say nothing of the insurance money, $50,000. So, Pat, I'll let you off the hook real easy. Expense account total, including some more gas for my car to get me back to Hartford, $12.34. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Larry Dobkin, Ralph Moody, Gil Stratton, Herb Vigran, and Vic Perrin. This is Jim Matthews speaking. Johnny Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Days. If you enjoy our show, please do take a moment and send us a kind review. And remember to share our show with others. Until next time, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.